Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good morning. Welcome in. We're Grant and Danny. You are listening to 106.7 The Fan. How was your Wednesday night?
Bad DC sports night, brother.
Not great.
What the hell's going on? What's more of a shebangus right now? The Capitals' power play, were not only were they 0 for 5 last night, but they gave up a shutout, or Nick Jensen. What's more of a shebangus?
The Capitals' power play is more maddening because I know Nick Jensen has struggled all year long, and at this point I don't expect a whole lot else. But the power play has been one of the best 5 or so in the sport for 10 years running. Has been one of the best 10 all year long. Since December 1st, though, it's been a nightmare. They're actually 30th in the NHL since 12-1. 30th. With Alex Ovechkin in his office and Nicholas Backstrom and Evgeny Kuznetsov
working the puck. You feel like it's going to turn.
John Carlson on the point. You know, all the skill they've got on the ice. TJ Oshie in the slot. It's inexcusable that they should go 5 weeks basically being dead last in the NHL in the power play.
But that goal that Nick Jensen gave up, and I said the goal that Nick Jensen gave up last night. The other day, my son, who's got an ear infection, by the way, which is a blast. Last night was a hoot. He was trying to brush his teeth, and he's like fumbling with the toothbrush, and he ended up like inadvertently sticking it too far in his mouth. Okay, you see where I'm going?
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
And so something happened in the sink. That's what Nick Jensen looked like last night, where he's just sitting there. He's like, what do I do with this? Oh, God, there's a puck, and he gave it away, and it was an easy goal.
Brian McClellan has gotten almost nothing wrong as the general manager of the Capitals. There may be some tiny minor things that don't really matter, but of all the decisions of consequence where money was spent and major investments were handed over, he's gotten almost everything right. He bats about .967 at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Jensen getting the extension he did sight unseen after that trade looks like it was a mistake. He's not why they lost last night. He turned a puck over for the first goal of the game for the Flyers. Kuznetsov put Carlson in a bad spot who had a turnover on another one of the goals. And as you said, the power play killed the Caps. But in a Metro Division game against the Flyers last night on the road in Philly, they lose 3-2.
Capitals trying to find a little bit more productivity on the power play. They have not really generated much at all, but they've got a chance again here. Kuznetsov in on the right circle. Back down to Carlson, who turned it over, and now it's a breakaway. Kevin Hayes coming down the middle, one-on-none. He'll skate in, back, can't score. Kevin Hayes on a shorthanded breakaway and a bad giveaway turns into a go-ahead goal for Philadelphia.
Caps weren't the only DC team losing last night. Mm-mm. The Wizards lost by 34 to the Orlando Magic, who are sub 500. Now, I'm not going to sit here and feign anger after you lose by 30-plus to a bad team. This is the kind of year the Wizards are going to have. We knew that coming in. This week, they had a huge win over Denver. They've beaten two good teams. Here is what is odd and inexplicable to me. I can take solace in 18 points from Troy Brown, who's developing a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I can feel good about a career best. 18 points for Admiral Schofield last night. That's fun. You need to explain to me, this is the time where now I ask you the questions.
Okay.
How is it that this team,
I don't know,
it doesn't matter how they're playing or who they've recently beaten, when they play Orlando, who's almost never good, by the way.
And they're not good now.
They forget how to play basketball. This is their team. Like, we talk about matchups sometimes, Danny, where why can't this team beat this other club? The Wizards cannot, forget beat, they can't play the Magic respectably. What is the deal with this?
So they've lost two close games to the Magic and then got the doors blown off last night. If I had an answer for you, I'd give it to you. And then I'd email Scott Brooks. ScottBrooks@Wizards.com. I have no earthly clue.
Is it Scott not Brooks? Is it S. Brooks at Wizards?
I think they resolved to the dot in the middle just to keep some clarity. It looks more professional instead of just having the one name bundled together. So ScottBrooks@Wizards.com. I have no idea. I mean, it's DJ Augustine getting 32 minutes. That DJ Augustine, the guy that's been Well, I guess we'll just call Digi Augustine when you have 47 injuries. You don't have a point guard on the roster.
Too much Evan Fournier last night.
He kills them, by the way.
He really does.
So, I don't know. The ingredients are there. It's nice to see Markelle Fultz, local product, try to salvage something out of his career. Salvage is probably too strong a word.
Good luck to him.
Well, I hope he does well, I guess, at some point. But, you know, he's basically resigned himself to not really being a shooter and trying to create in other ways. I don't know that he's going to be a winning player on a winning team anytime soon, but it's nice to see him contribute in some way. Vucevic is a good big. I have no answer for you. The Wizards had nobody healthy last night. They had really eight guys total that they probably could have contributed. They had nine guys, I think, in total get minutes. But, man, it just looks gross.
We're going to have Justin Kutcher on the show today, who calls Wizards play-by-play on NBC Sports Washington. He's actually going to join us in studio today at 1:30. An odd day where we'll have two in-studio guests. Both of them are the voices of D.C. sports teams. Charlie Slows is stopping by at 11:30 with the latest on the Nationals. And then Justin Kutcher today at 1:30 in studio with us to break down the Wizards, Bradley Beal's health, and some of the development of some of the young guys. It's been exciting over the last few weeks. Before we get into the NFL playoffs, which are starting anew on Saturday in round two, one more thing from last night I wanted to bounce off of you. Did you see the video? It was all over Twitter. It was all over the internet of the brawl in the Dominican Republic last night in a baseball game in the DR.
I did not see this.
You have not seen this?
I missed this. No, I didn't see it.
Okay. I want you to look it up as I'm telling you about it. Just throw it into Twitter, just baseball brawl or brawl DR. Basically, here's what I need you to understand.
All right.
Guys at the plate, they throw behind the guy. Instead of charging the mound, which you would normally do, he proceeds to turn around and hit the catcher with his bat in the arm.
I take it back. I did see that. I didn't know that was in the DR. Okay.
And then he proceeds to, again, smash his bat with a swing into the back of the catcher to initiate a massive brawl. I've never seen anything like that. Now, there's one video from probably now, if I had to guess, 15 years ago, where a Red Sox prospect, I want to say the guy's last name was like Alcantara, but
you're talking about the kick?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where he gets hit by a pitch and he drop kicks the catcher. Legit just drop kicks him in the mask with his cleat and then goes and charges the mound. That's the only thing I can think of that's on the level of last night in terms of craziness. But I've never seen a guy take a bat to a player on the field.
No.
Now, the first swing was like kind of a weak swing and you could tell he didn't really want to do it. And he just kind of like tapped him. But after that, he's like, okay, if I'm doing this, I might as well go all out. And then he actually swings and hits him one good time.
It's stuff like this is so scary. And it seems like nobody really got seriously hurt, right? Which is important to me. But let's not celebrate these things. Let's try to get the fighting out. Let's try to not hit each other with weapons, like the baseball, which can really hurt and do damage to you, can knock you out. Let's not swing the bat at people. God, this is just so brutal.
I think everyone's on board with that, by the way. I'm not sure anybody's going to be celebrating the swinging of the bat.
It's not anything revolutionary. It's just...
Here's my question, though. If that happened in Major League Baseball...
What happens to the dude?
What happens to the player who swings the bat? Someone asked me that last night at the TV station. I said I think they would be gone for a full season. So I don't. Here's what I don't know, is if it happened in like game 29... Is it just the rest of the year?
You get 133 games?
Or is it 162 games? So, like, until 30 games into the following season, you can't come back. My guess is you'd get a one-year suspension. Myles Garrett swinging his helmet, or I guess it was Mason Rudolph's helmet, and hitting the Steelers quarterback in the head with it is probably the closest thing I can recently remember. He was kicked out for the rest of the season. We're not really sure when he's going to come back yet. But if a guy did that in Major League Baseball, turn around, hit a catcher with a bat, I think they would probably be done for a full year at least.
My first instinct was half a season. So we're talking about something really significant.
So 81 games?
Yeah, like, I mean, I know 81 seems fairly arbitrary, but that's like the drug suspensions now. So that's why that number jumped into my head, because we associate 81 with the first major suspension, you know? But you might be right. It might be stiffer than that, because there's a...
It's a bat.
Dude, you can't do this to that.
My rebuttal, it's a bat.
It's a bat, man.
He's taking a bat and he's hitting a human being with it. It's an actual bat. That's a thing you would defend yourself with. Like, there are people that don't believe in having guns that have bats next to their bed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a legitimate weapon. When you think about weapons, if you take guns and knives out of the equation. Like, bat is one of the next things you would use as an actual weapon to hurt someone.
Like, I think of the scene in Pulp Fiction when Bruce Willis's character's got to go back downstairs. Before he saw the chainsaw, I think the second last thing was a bat.
Right. I just couldn't believe that video. It was incredible. He's Danny. I'm Grant. This is The Fan. In the 11 o'clock hour, if Trent Williams is willing to come back to the Redskins, do you want him back or would you trade him? And what kind of compensation would you need to move on from the former Pro Bowl left tackle? We'll do that coming up at 11 in 45 minutes. But next, there are 8 remaining head coaches in the NFL playoffs. Which do you have the most and the least faith in? We'll discuss that on The Fan. The breakfast that the Junkies had dropped off today looks immaculate.
It's ridiculous.
And in fact, a listener asked us, said, I hope you guys still have some leftovers that you can enjoy from Founding Farmers Food Drop with the Junkies.
This is where you're faced with a choice if you're us.
There are leftovers.
Yep.
It's an option at our disposal. But I ate so badly over the holidays. I'm at like a crossroads now where either I get back to the grind with our good friends at EMP 180 or I'm in trouble. So I'm going to get back to the grind.
Yep.
I can't go out and eat that. But it's like delicious.
Pastries with bacon in it.
Pastries with bacon.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Cinnamon rolls with bacon inside.
Do you like honey buns? Do you like cinnamon rolls?
The fact that people that are employed by us are not just devouring these things is absurd. If you can eat carbs and don't, I know you're trying to be sympathetic to us.
No one's trying to be sympathetic to us.
I know.
But this is the frustration, by the way.
Like, if you're thin, eat it. Eat it now.
Like, Dar and Thom haven't eaten one of those. Why not?
What are you doing? Eat it
now. What's the point? I would have had two of those.
Are there nuts, Thom? Is that one?
If I was either of those.
Yeah, there's nuts.
Oh, there's a nut allergy situation. Okay.
It would kill him.
You're excused. But seriously, they shouldn't be 10 of those left right now.
It's unbelievable. They look amazing.
CK's like, oh, I had half of one. It was really good.
I was looking at it. I got full. Did you
have a half of one? Why not a full one and then another one?
You eat all of them. But I basically, Bone Thugs is playing in the background for me, too. I'm at that crossroads, and I was deplorable. I embarrassed myself over a month plus. And then I was like, well, I can't really work out because of my rib. So I got doubly bad. You know, my whole body looks like when Bugs Bunny blows up his thumb and his hand gets all fat. That's how my whole body looks right now.
He hits his thumb with a hammer or something.
You know, when he does like the to inflate himself. That's what I look like. I'm disgusting at the moment.
Dar, what's your excuse? Why haven't you eaten one of those?
Well, for the record, I need you to know that I risked it all for a cheese Danish.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, good for you.
It was so good.
Good for you.
Pete, have you had any? Have you had anything to eat over here?
Yeah, I had a delicious bacon burrito.
Yeah.
And a full, I think it was a apple or cherry cranberry Danish, something like that.
Oh,
I ate the full thing. I'm not like CK. I don't take half. I take the whole thing.
Better. See, Pete's my guy, though, because Pete will make sure. He's not going to get just half one of. He'll get a couple of things, you know? That's what I like about Pete.
So there are two folks here at the radio station who I like an awful lot, who do weird things when it comes to this. Number one, Bickle will just take off the top of it and kind of like use his fingers and sort of chop it in thirds.
That's
and
the
like
creepiest thing
graze
ever.
Graze by it, and he's doing. He licks the icing
they
off.
They could
and
make
puts
a
back.
Netflix documentary called "Don't Bleat with Danishes," and it'll just show EB doing that, and amazing. It would be on brand.
And the second person, of course, is our program director, who eats like a bird that's full for the winter, and begrudgingly accepts delicious food, even though he doesn't get fat.
It's very maddening.
Mm-hmm.
8 remaining teams in the NFL. Of those 8 teams, I want to go through with you. We'll call out the coaches and assign some confidence points to them. We're going to end up inevitably giving you the guy that we're the most and the least confident in right now. Start with matchup number 1, Minnesota Vikings, Mike Zimmer and Kyle Shanahan. Mike Zimmer is a defensive coordinator turned head coach who has been successful with the Vikings, but who I don't really trust as far as I can throw him, to be completely honest with you at this point. He is very much a run first, run second, run third, conservative coach not to lose, 50 years ago's NFL kind of coach.
Mm-hmm.
Not really for me. And you saw that it almost cost the Vikings their game against New Orleans. They have the Ron Rivera thing going on right now, where they're good and then bad, good and then bad. Here is their run under Zimmer. 7-9, then 11-5. 8-8, then 13-3. 8-7-1, now 10-6. They haven't consistently put it together. He was in trouble. If they lost last week, he might have lost his job. With that win, I think he's safe. He takes on Kyle Shanahan. I'm just not much of a Zimmer guy because he gets in the way too often of his offensive coordinators. Fired one last year. The other one butted his head against him all season long. Now it's Stefanski, who can't really do what he wants. He'll be a head coach soon. He'll get out of there, hopefully, and go spread his wings and fly.
Mm-hmm. The way I think of this in terms of confidence points, right, is which coach, not necessarily who's going to win the game because teams are better or worse this week, and that all kind of factors into it. But it's who's going to make the winning decisions, a.k.a. put you in the best chance to win. That's clock management. That's timeouts. That's challenges. That's when to go for it. That's what, you know, optimizing play calls, efficiency, all the right things. Who's going to do the most to help their football team? Mike Zimmer's really low on my list. Doesn't mean that Mike Zimmer's not a good football coach, right? He is what he is, and he gets good responses from his players. You saw what happened against New Orleans. They won the game. I think in spite of Mike Zimmer walking over to his offensive coordinator and going, run the ball a lot. We're punting. We're going to put on a punting exhibition, see if we can get this thing to overtime where it turns into a coin toss when we have a wonderful lead.
Kyle Shanahan's been in San Francisco for 3 years, year 1, 6, and 10. Second year, they stepped backward. That's because Jimmy Garoppolo got hurt, and they were using Nick Mullins, or was it Jim Mullins? One of those two. 4-12 for the Niners last year, and then 13-3 this season. Look, he is a young guy who relates to players. I need less writing about drip and swag. There was a big story on Kyle Shanahan yesterday about he's got swag. He wears Yeezys and he's got a flat brim cap. I don't care about any of that. I do care about the fact that he gets wide receivers open and he's been doing it since he was here with Jabbar Gaffney years ago going for 1,000 yards and Anthony Armstrong going for 950.
Awesome.
And, well, it's the Shanahan tree, man. Yeah. It's Shanahan and Alex Gibbs and Gary Kubiak. Nobody is smarter and better at designing running games than those guys, and he's a chip off the old block. Kyle Shanahan, to me, is as sharp a coach as you've got remaining in the NFL.
He's a super sharp guy. He's not as high on my rankings as you might think just because he hasn't done it in the postseason yet, and I want to see what happens when it's, you know, when it's winning time here. He's got a good club, though, and he's smart.
That's a win the game, though, take for
me. Not quite. I'm just saying. This is a different environment.
Playoffs
come postseason. Yeah.
I mean, okay.
Is he going to make all the winning decisions with, again, the challenges, the mechanics, the timeouts, all those sorts of things? We'll see. I like him, though.
Same game. It's been all year.
Postseason.
A-Rod didn't hit in October? Are you that guy?
No. Second postseason's a little different, seems to be, right?
I tend to be of the belief that if you did something in November, then you can also do it in January. But I know a lot of people don't feel that way. Titans-Ravens, AFC matchup Saturday night. Mike Vrabel. We don't know a lot about him, but he seems to be a guy who gets his team to the playoffs back-to-back years, and it's a defensive-minded team. He played linebacker in the league semi-recently. And they're hard-nosed, man. His teams are physical. They run the ball. They play D. A little bit of an old-school coach.
I'm a Vrabel guy because I think he's, to me, the perfect recipe. You combine the toughness. You combine the we're doing it my way, right? The get everybody to pull the rope in the same direction. You also add in he's willing to adapt and be smart. I think he's a really sharp guy. I'm a pretty big fan of his. I think Tennessee is just pedestrian in terms of their talent. I know they have a couple nice pieces, be it A.J. Brown or Derrick Henry or a couple of their defensive players are perfectly fine, but that's not enough to me to start, you know, beating the Patriots on the road. I give Vrabel a lot of credit. I think that dude's a sharp cookie.
I do, too. It's hard to argue, I should say, with the results. The Ravens and John Harbaugh. Am I wrong, or wasn't there a lot of talk that they were going to get rid of him?
Remember that?
Last year. And then they made the playoffs, and everything was fine.
Yeah, that buzz was around. When you are hamstrung by Joe Flacco, and you're trying to find some offense that's going to work for him, spoiler alert, there isn't one.
Although, you know, I guess looking at it, that's not that unreasonable. He's been there since 2008. That's a long time.
It is.
Like, coaches don't get just like 20 years unless you're Chuck Knoll or Vince Lombardi or someone who wins 5 Super Bowls. He won a Super Bowl with the Ravens in 2012. Since then, they've had one 10-win season before last year. Since that Super Bowl, they were 8-8, 10-6, 5-11, 8-8, 9-7. So I understand, I guess, that he was coming under some fire right around 2017. But they made the playoffs after going to Lamar Jackson, finally getting away from Joe Flacco at 10-6, and then this year 14-2. I think Harbaugh is one of the best coaches in football. Now, I love some of the Mike Duff stuff that comes out on him, where he's sitting there talking to Lamar Jackson, and you could tell, like Ron Rivera, good guy,
yep,
mensch of a human being, his players love him. What about the Texans and the Chiefs? Bill O'Brien, Andy Reid.
Oh, man, am I really, really low on one of those guys. Can you guess who?
It's not Andy Reid.
It ain't Andy Reid. It's Mr. O'Brien. That guy manages
Mr.
the clock
O'Brien.
Like he can't see the clock. He stinks. He's a bad general manager. Now, I think he's a smart offensive mind, gets guys open,
he's
et
cetera. He's a hell of an offensive coordinator.
But he still can't help himself, falls into habits. Somebody has to make sure that Carlos Hyde gets plenty of carries. Who else is going to run for 2.5 yards a pop? Somebody's got to do it. I'm the man to do it, says Mr. O'Brien. Oh, do I think so little of him.
Andy Reid is the most underrated coach in the NFL, and he is the epitome of a guy who it's held against him that his teams haven't won in the playoffs, you know, Marty Schottenheimer style. You know, we were talking earlier about Kyle Shanahan. You said, I don't know if he could do it in the playoffs.
Just haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, that take, though, on Marty Schottenheimer is why he's not a Hall of Famer, even though he probably deserves to be. Andy Reid isn't the reason that his player loses a fumble or throws a pick or doesn't make a tackle. He's doing the same stuff all week this week that he does when they go 12-4 all regular season. They play tougher teams. They haven't gotten to the top of the mountain. I really want to see the Chiefs win a Super Bowl for Andy Reid because I do think he is excellent. Finally, you got the Seahawks and one of the oldest coaches in football.
Yeah.
Even though you wouldn't know it because he's pretty active and spry, and that is Pete Carroll, and he's going head-to-head with a first-timer. You haven't seen him do it either. Matt LaFleur of the Green Bay Packers. LaFleur took a great job, in some ways kind of started between second and third base.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not easy to work with Aaron Rodgers. He's done as much or more with the Packers than Mike McCarthy was able to do all but a couple of seasons already. They went 13-3. They had a bye. Can't argue with the results.
I just don't know about LaFleur just yet. He's got a great regular season winning formula. Can you get involved in a shootout and win? We haven't seen that from Green Bay an awful lot this year. Can you do something to break type to win a playoff game? I don't know. I don't know the answer. I like LaFleur, what I've seen so far, but I've got him lower on my rankings here in terms of confidence points. Again, just due to uncertainty. Carroll, I'm a Carroll guy. I know his act, you know, bothers some people, runs some people. They get a little bit tired of it. That guy just somehow finds a way to put Band-Aids on things and take teams that are under-talented and injured, and he gets them to 10, 11, 12 wins, and they're a threat.
Pete Carroll has had as successful a last 10 years as anybody in football. In fact, if you look at the winning percentages in the sport this year, Seattle is right there in the top five over the last decade. But since 2012 for Carroll, 11-5, 13-3, 12-4, 10-6, 10-5, 10-6, 11-5. He's had one sub-10-win season during that time. Pretty amazing. So, coach you have the most confidence in, coach you have the least confidence in.
Number one, John Harbaugh. I like his adaptability. I like that he listens to the math guys up in the booth, et cetera. Number eight, in terms of winning decisions, it's Mike Zimmer. I think he's going to make losing decisions for the Minnesota Vikings.
I would have gone Zimmer eight. You did, so I don't want to be boring. I'm going to say Bill O'Brien last for me. I'll put him eighth. My top coach remaining in these playoffs, I think Kyle Shanahan is the smartest football guy left, but I'm actually going to side with Pete Carroll of the Seattle Seahawks. He's been there. He's won the Super Bowl. He's been to a couple of them, and again, if you just look at the last several seasons, I have twice said Seattle's done. That was a good window. It closed. And with another group, he just gets them right back to the top of the heap. What about quarterbacks? Let's do the same exercise on the field, under center. There are eight remaining QBs. Who do we have the most and the least confidence in? We'll tackle that next on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Did you see the Dick Vitale tweet that everyone was talking about last night?
The I want to do this till I'm 100 bit?
No. This was from 2 days ago. And I laugh. I mean, it's not even as funny probably as a lot of people might think it is. But he basically, in a stream of conscious, was just like tweeting about the things that he cared about. And so in the same tweet, he said that he was watching the coverage of the war that was breaking out basically with the bombs that were going off, while also saying it was a huge win for Rutgers. And it was just like one thought from Dick Vitale, and it's like, in his world, those things are basically the same at this moment.
Wow.
Either that or he doesn't know how to use Twitter, but everybody was talking about it. Someone sent it to me yesterday, and there's some levity to it, but it was kind of funny where it's like, watching the news like everyone else about what's going on in Iran, crazy. Also, huge win for Rutgers.
In addition.
And I'm paraphrasing. But it was pretty
hysterical. That is good.
Thoughts, obviously, with everyone overseas.
Of course, man.
Right.
Please
now,
be safe.
Helping to, as always, make you and I and so many others here in the United States safe and comfortable getting to do jobs like this one. Talking about quarterbacks, talking about football. Four games, eight teams remaining. We just went through the coaches. Let's go through the QBs. Who are you most confident in? Who are you least confident in? You start with the Vikings and the 49ers, Kirk Cousins and Jimmy Garoppolo. Two pretty similar guys. In fact, if you look at their stats and you take the names out, they're almost identical this season. Touchdowns, interceptions, rating, yards, almost to a number. It's crazy how similar they are this year. Both benefiting from good rushing offenses. San Francisco's obviously a little bit better than Minnesota's. 49ers have a better defense. Cousins, for that reason, had a slightly better year than Garoppolo. That having been said, we haven't seen Jimmy G in the playoffs. This is Cousins' third postseason game. Obviously, there are plenty of big spots where he could have played better. There are some big spots where he's played okay. But he tends to get tight in games where, not necessarily there's a lot on the line, but where he's getting pressured a whole bunch, as a lot of quarterbacks do. So in this game, I actually think Garoppolo should have a better game because I think he'll get more help. I think he's on a better team. Mm-hmm. I think his team will be playing with the lead. I'd have more confidence in Garoppolo than Cousins, not because I think he's necessarily better, but because I think the situation will be better.
Yeah, so I've got Cousins at the bottom of my confidence rankings for this week, okay?
You got him eighth?
Yeah, I got him eighth. And here's
below Ryan Tannehill?
Below Tannehill. Here's why. The opponent, you touched on it. I think San Francisco's defense is ridiculous. I think they're going to harass him. And when you harass Kirk Cousins, bad things tend to happen for Kirk Cousins. The other part of the reason I got him last is part of its playing style. If he's in the pocket, back foot hits the ground, he pats the football once, ball comes out, he can be dynamic. He doesn't have the improvisational skills of the Wilsons, the Rodgers, the Mahomes, Watson, Jackson. Sort of go down the list. That, to me, is playoff winning, right?
Yeah.
It's awesome when it's 72 and sunny. He'll dial it up and put up great numbers like anybody else. I don't see him escaping pressure, getting out of the pocket on a third and nine in the fourth quarter. That, to me, is not what he does.
No, he's not going off schedule and making that play that wasn't designed on Wednesday or Thursday. Let's get to the Titans and the Ravens. Ryan Tannehill, who completed, I think it was like 7 or 8 passes.
8 of 15 for 70 yards, whatever it was.
8 of 15. That is, like, you take 2005 Mark Brunell and you knock his numbers in half.
Sorry, you better check
it
down.
You get Tannehill in a win against the Patriots, but he just won, though. All he does is win playoff games,
wins.
Baltimore Ravens have Lamar Jackson. You may have heard of him. He just turned 23. He's the reigning MVP. He's the first QB ever to rush for 1,000 yards and throw 30 touchdowns in the same season. His first chance with, you know, he played in the playoffs last year against the Chargers, but I would say going into a game that he should win, going into a game with a team that is now entrenched around him with a scheme that fits him beautifully. This is a whole different ballgame than a year ago. I've got a lot of confidence in Jackson to go out and play well because they've designed everything for him.
Mm-hmm.
This is basically a offense where they said, what can't you do? We'll get rid of this. What do you do well? Okay, we're going to highlight and accentuate these four things. So I think he'll play well. I have very little confidence in Tannehill. I know he had a big second half, but you saw it last week.
Yeah.
This is the Derrick Henry or bust show.
Yeah, that's why Tannehill's second to last on my rankings. I think they'll have to throw it a bit more, and I think he'll play a larger role than he did this past week, obviously, where he only threw it 15 times, checked it down, and basically handed it to Derrick Henry a million times over. Even though he had an unbelievable regular season, the best yards per attempt, the best net yards per attempt of any quarterback in football, their offense was just a different story once he took over middle of the season. But this Ravens defense is excellent. They've upgraded a cornerback. They're not great at rushing the passer without blitzing. That may be to Tannehill's advantage, but I don't think he'll play great in this one. That's why I've got a pretty high confidence point in Lamar Jackson.
So I'm a Lamar Jackson believer in the playoffs as long as they can play from in front.
Uh-huh.
I think they're going to almost all night in this game, and so I'm going to have them really high in my confidence rankings. You go to day two on Sunday in game three, the Texans and the Chiefs. The two quarterbacks who have the best quarterback ratings for the first 3 years of their career in history.
Mm-hmm.
Deshaun Watson of Houston and Pat Mahomes leading the Kansas City Chiefs at Arrowhead Stadium at home. Jackson against the Titans has a more favorable matchup, even though that's a good defense perhaps, than a guy like Watson does against the Chiefs because he could be playing from behind. You're playing a superior team. You're going to have to play hero ball. But Deshaun Watson twice now in the playoffs has not really played a great game. He made a few hero plays the other day, and he made a few great decisions in the pocket.
Mm-hmm.
He did a couple ridiculously athletic things, and they won because of it. But he's, in two playoff games, pressed and struggled.
Yeah.
Waiting to see him break out. I have all the confidence in the world against Mahomes. I think he slices and dices the Texans. I actually think the Chiefs win going away in this game. I think Mahomes has a field day. I'm worried more about Deshaun Watson in this contest.
So I echo everything you just said. I have a lot of confidence that Pat Mahomes will have a wonderful day at the office against the Houston Texans. I think they're frauds. I think their time has come. Thank you so much for being here. We appreciate it. Here are your consolation gifts. Enjoy the rest of the postseason from the couch. That said, you know how I feel about Deshaun Watson. I think he'll play great. I just don't think he's got enough. I don't think there's enough help. I don't know what Will Fuller's status is. He's still limited, et cetera. They're a different offense with him. You're going to ask Deshaun Watson basically to create from nothing. He'll have to do that. He'll put up some pretty good numbers, I think, but it'll be for naught. Kansas City's going to win going away by a couple scores.
Final game of the weekend is the Seahawks and the Packers. Russell Wilson was an MVP candidate for much of the season. Aaron Rodgers is one of the best quarterbacks who has ever lived. By his standards, a down year. They've been a little more run heavy with LaFleur this season than in years past under Mike McCarthy, which I actually think is a good thing for Green Bay this time of year and makes me think that Aaron Rodgers has a chance to win a second Super Bowl perhaps at age 36. Wilson, I would have more confidence in if they still had Carson and the running game that traditionally they do where they don't have to ask him to do everything. Because they don't, because Marshawn Lynch is old and is going to average 2 yards per carry, it's Russell Wilson or they lose. And when that happens typically, as good as Wilson is, Seattle is a worse version of themselves. So
we agree there.
He gets bumped down the list. Rodgers is in the top three this weekend for me.
So just there's too much track record here for me to not have these guys really, really high on my list. I think Russell Wilson's going to play great, but I think he doesn't have enough help. You know what I mean? I think they're sort of stuck. They're basically going to do the Brian Schottenheimer offense where it's, I don't know, man, Russell, just do something. I think that's what they're going to end up having to do against this Green Bay team. I think Wilson's going to do what he always does, escape danger, pull plays out of his tuchus, just do amazing stuff and be the highlight of the weekend. So I think he's going to play great. Aaron Rodgers, despite what this year has been all about, which is, as you said, getting the ball to Aaron Jones, checking it down, taking a lot of time off the clock, letting their defense eat, Aaron Rodgers is one of the best players of all time. He is a Hall of Famer. He knows he's got a window. You're going to expect Aaron Rodgers not to do something remarkable this weekend. He's really high on my list.
I am most confident in Pat Mahomes to play a banner game on Sunday, 3:05 kick against the Texans. I am least confident in Ryan Tannehill to do anything to help his team. Titans against the Ravens. You know, Baltimore's defense is not a walk in the park.
No, they're good.
They are a pain in the butt, and I can't unsee Saturday night that quickly.
I get it.
They kind of coached against him for a lot of that night. I have seen plenty of their action, but I didn't really buy this. Ryan Tannehill is having a renaissance here. Yeah, he's been really good. The numbers
season.
Are very solid. Had an excellent second half. He is who we've always thought he is. It just so happens that Derrick Henry is amazing and their defense is great, and so this is the easiest he's ever had it now. But he's eighth, and it's distantly eighth for me.
Mahomes is on my podium. I'm going to give the nod just to, you know, it's one of those Oscars that may not be for this year, but it's a lifetime achievement award, you know, like DiCaprio finally got or Scorsese finally got. Give me Rodgers as my one seed. Eight seed Cousins narrowly beats out Tannehill for me. I think San Francisco is so good. And the thing that I think you have to do in the playoffs is this probably shouldn't work, but you somehow find a way to make it work. The 3rd and 11, getting a 4th and 12 at some point on a 2-minute drill due to some improvisation escapability. I don't think that's Cousins' strength.
I want to talk to you about the Jerry Jones press conference to introduce Mike McCarthy yesterday.
Sure, let's do it. Yeah. Sure.
There were some gems in there. By the way, Matt Rhule's presser was unbelievable.
Was it really?
No wonder why that guy gets every job he ever interviews for. That was amazing. I've never seen a better introductory press conference than him. I guess his dad was a preacher. I mean, you could tell. That guy is an orator. He was awesome behind the mic. That having been said, we can discuss some of the coaching openings that have been filled, and what are the Cleveland Browns going to do? That is the last team to hire a head coach, the last vacancy in the National Football League. Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. He's Danny. I'm Grant. This is The Fan. So you did not hear any of Matt Rhule's press conference yesterday, I
missed
it,
man. I was doing a bunch of stuff. I missed that.
I loved the Ron Rivera hiring. And I've said this a few times on the air.
Rhule was your one seed, right?
Well, I don't even mean that. I just mean Rivera, I got to know a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not pretending like he would know my name if he saw me or anything. But we spent several league events where I would interview him or talk to him about football for 20 minutes. In fact, one time I even flew back from one of these events, like sitting next to him on a commercial flight or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had cool conversations. I've always thought he was one of the nicer guys in the league. I think he's a great human being. I'm pumped that he's here. His introductory press conference, I thought, was really good. It was authoritative. He kind of took control. He's just an adult in the room. He's going to run the program. He came off like a CEO. I liked everything about it. There is a different level, though, of, say, a Rivera or pick any of the other guys who are going to have these press conferences like Mike McCarthy and Matt Rhule with the Panthers. Matt Rhule, he just, from off the cuff, it just is almost like a motivational speaker. Now, I don't know if when you're losing, if that's going to rub players the wrong way. Tommy, give me the cut from Matt Rhule on Loves the Game of Football, if you would. But there's a guy who you normally hire, that's your normal football coach, and what they've done their whole life is football, and they're in their element talking ball, X's and O's and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the other type of hire, like, and I would put Sean McVay in this category, or Matt Rhule, who can do that when it's time to talk football, but in any room they're ever in, they're a chameleon where they'll just own that room. A lot of the football robots don't do that. Like, I'll be honest, Kyle Shanahan does not have that gear. He does not have people skills like that. I guess it's a knock. It's not meant to be. But when people ask me what kind of head coach is Kyle Shanahan going to be, I was always a little bit skeptical. I was dubious about it because, like, in a room where, let's say, I just bump into Kyle Shanahan in a movie theater with, like, my wife and kid, it would be the most awkward interaction ever.
Right.
Sean McVay would, like, get on a knee, like, hey, little kid, how you doing? What's your name? Oh, what do you
doing? Here's
the
quarter. Yeah.
And like, 2 minutes later, they love this guy, and they're like, when are we going to Sean's house for dinner? That's the vibe I get from Matt Rhule.
Because I got one of my good buddies is a genius. He's a doctor. Couldn't be a cooler dude. And he would rather, I mean, eat a bowl of cockroaches than say one word in front of more than three people.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, and he's the greatest dude ever, but just when it comes to, like, a big public thing like that, he would die if he had to do it.
Rhule introduced yesterday in Charlotte.
People have asked me, you know, why the call, why the draw, why do you want to take on this next chapter of your life? Well, Coach, you had a great thing at Baylor. Why did you want to go to the NFL? And it's really simple to me. I start every decision in my life with why, and I'll tell you this. I love the game of football.
You could just—that's just a little glimpse of it. But you could see it's not like he's reading notes or that guy's just speaking from the heart for an hour. And maybe you don't buy it. And look, none of this really matters.
Right?
Honestly.
You can win a press conference.
When the press conference ends and you go back to your office, now you're coaching the Panthers, and either you're going to have a quarterback who allows you to win games next year, or you're not, and that won't matter at all. But I am a sucker for this kind of stuff.
When you can third person it. Pretend, like, making up a question to give the response
that
yourself.
Comfort.
That when you're that comfortable on stage where it's like, people ask me, Coach, why? Did anyone actually ask you that? Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. I don't know. But, like, when you get to set it up that way, you get to sound awesome.
Mike McCarthy was also introduced yesterday. Now, this is the juxtaposition here. Mm-hmm. Because he is won a Super Bowl, and with Aaron Rodgers had a ton of success in Green Bay.
Western Pennsylvania, you're going to talk about it.
But he is your football guy. He's going to be right here, and there's not a lot of change in the volume. And you're right, he's a yinzer. He's got that Pennsylvania thing going. But there's not a lot of adding and subtracting and taking velocity off those pitches. There's no excitement to him. I listen to that, and I happen to think that's a pretty good hire for the Cowboys. I think they're close. He's a safe hire.
Yeah, safe hire.
I don't think by any means it's a home run hire or anything like that, but it's super safe, and they can win a Super Bowl with him in the next 3-4 years if they do some things correctly. But what an just a fairly boring press conference that was. This was Mike McCarthy on yesterday when he was introduced by the Dallas Cowboys. Jerry Jones sitting next to him answering a million questions. And by the way, Jerry Jones yesterday, no one loves those days more than him.
That's his Super Bowl.
He comes out of waiting. The cut is Dallas McCarthy. The one and only goal is to win the Super Bowl.
Well,
Jerry Jones yesterday with the media all gathered around. He's telling stories. He's calling everyone by their name. He's like, hey, Calvin, nice hat. Now, talking about some reporter right in the front. But this was McCarthy yesterday.
Well, I mean, expectations, we'll get into that, obviously, once we get going. But, I mean, it's the Dallas Cowboys. I don't think you need to go further than that. You know, obviously, the tradition and history here is so unique. And it's an iconic franchise. And, you know, the opportunity to really get in the room and talk football and structure, culture, and all the things a part of, you know, what we feel like we need to do to win that Super Bowl. Really, when you think about expectation, The goal will never change here. You know, it's about winning championships. But the expectation is going to be trust in the process, and that process will be, you know, we'll get to work on that as soon as we can here.
There was one super weird moment in that press conference where Jones told this story about his sister when she was getting a divorce.
He loves whatever that is.
Dude, if I was his sister, I would be so mad. So he's talking about how my sister was getting a divorce, and he basically was like, with this guy, we didn't want her to, right? And she's talking to my dad. She's like, Dad, I just don't hear bells anymore. Like, that's a very personal story that you're just telling everyone
at a betrayal of confidence
press conference.
Apropos and, of nothing.
Right. For no reason you're
Before
saying
Before I bring
this.
Up Mike McCarthy, here's a story about my sister who left a wonderful man. Right. What are you doing?
What are you talking about? So he's like, my dad said, honey, this is life. You don't hear bells forever. You think me and your mother still hear bells? I'm kind of making this up, but right. This was the story he told, like literally. And the whole point of the story was, you know, anyway, besides the point, I heard bells with Mike McCarthy. I heard bells. And like his whole point was to say that he's in love with Mike McCarthy, but he just completely threw his sister under the bus.
I didn't hear bells with Jason Garrett no more, even though he would try to ring a bell in my presence. And I hear one with Mike McCarthy, ding dong, there goes the bell again.
He's in love with McCarthy all of a sudden.
Yeah, I mean,
he almost, so he basically cried when he was talking about firing Garrett.
Uh-huh.
And then he stopped and came to tears when he talked about hiring McCarthy and what a perfect fit it was. He got out of this.
He's a different dude, man.
9-year relationship or whatever it was with Garrett since 2011.
It took him 5 days to break up. A lot of times you have the breakup conversation, you do it like a Band-Aid. They stayed overnight for 6 nights drinking wine, trying to figure out if it was really over or not.
They kept talking about how special their night together was when he had Mike McCarthy stay overnight to seal the deal.
It was a sleepover. It was unplanned. It wasn't going to be no one-night stand.
McCarthy was like, well, I'll never forget that night. Gary's like, neither will I. And he's like on the verge of tears.
What are we doing?
That was something.
What are we doing? Are you running the 4-3?
That was a press conference and a half. Charlie Slows will be in studio with us at 11:30. A lot of Nats news for the voice of Nationals baseball to analyze with us. Next, though, Ron Rivera's talked about wanting to bring Trent Williams back. If Trent's open to returning, do you want him back or would you rather trade him at this point of his career? Would you do?
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.